You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we take up Probate 101, planning for and managing smaller estates. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free. We pay the freight, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic. Tonight is the topic of estate planning, particularly as it relates to planning for and managing the small estate. You're not limited to the point we may be in the conversation. And tonight, I'm happy to welcome attorney Catherine Ray Wong from the Redwood City firm of Aaron Reichert, Carpel and Riffle in Redwood City. Listen closely. We'll be giving a quiz at that again. But again, this is Redwood City attorney Catherine Ray Wong. Catherine is a certified specialist in estate planning, probate, and trust law. Also has her LLM in taxation and is a member of the Estate Planning, Probate, and Trust Law section of the California Lawyers Association. And with that, Catherine, let me welcome you to your legal rights.
Jeff, thanks for having me tonight on this eve of our independence of our nation for our holiday for July 4th tomorrow. And for estates, we want to discuss how to stay independent, how to manage our own affairs.
And with that, let me start with a very basic question. What is an estate?
Well, that's a very good question. A lot of people think, well, I don't have much. I don't have an estate. But it's actually everything that we own. It can be as simple as the clothes on your back, our vehicle, our jewelry, books, furniture, artwork, our collectibles, or intangible things like cash, investments, bank accounts, our credit union accounts, if you're lucky enough to have stocks or mutual funds, or real estate. It's also our retirement accounts, maybe with our work, our 401k, or our individual retirement accounts, also known as IRAs, and also life insurance, if you have life insurance on your life.
And, you know, we tend to have all this stuff around us, and if nothing else, some of these plans may not be disposing of vast assets. But the fact is, what do we want people to do with our stuff? What about these family photos we got?
And not only when we die, but what happens if we become sick and we can't handle things ourselves? We need a plan. And that's what estate planning is all about, to design simple documents as simple as possible to manage our stuff if we become sick or if we ultimately die, so someone that we know and trust can handle things for us.
Wonder where I could find somebody for that. Let's talk a little bit about planning. Let's start at, you know, where do you start from in planning for such things?
So, you know, it's very interesting when we think about the statistics that exist in our nation. More than half the people die without even having a will. And in the state of California, that's just really not necessary because here we can even handwrite a will. It has to be completely in the person's handwriting. And I always tell people, write the word will at the top of the page so that we know exactly what it is. And then write down what you want, name an executor, give your assets to whomever it is, and then sign and date it. Don't forget to sign and date it at the end.
So if I find what I think is a great example of a will on the internet, I can print it, but it doesn't work in California unless I write it and copy it.
Well, and if it's prepared, that's a good point. I've even gone to the hospital and prepared a will in my handwriting, sitting next to someone who's telling me what to write into their will. That type of prepared will needs two witnesses present in the room at the same time to watch the testator, the person whose will it is, and sign it at the same time as witnesses.
So if I'm typing it or somebody else writes it, somebody needs to witness me signing it.
That's correct. Two people present in the room at the same time.
But if I write it myself and sign it and date it, people are a lot. For the most part, they're stuck with it.
Right. And it has to be completely in your own handwriting. And if you're more comfortable in a different language other than English, which is the language that I do the best with. It can be in whatever language you're comfortable in writing.
So is a will typically enough?
A will is very helpful, and it speaks at death, we learn in law school. That's when it becomes effective. But if we become sick or incapacitated, or say we're doing something like traveling and we're not around to handle our affairs, it's really important to also have powers of attorney. We call them, it's best to have a durable power of attorney. The durable part in that title just means that it works if we're incapacitated.
Now, let me back up just a little bit. You mentioned a power of attorney, and most people have some sense that a power of attorney doesn't mean you become the person's lawyer. It means you can sign for them.
That's right. We call them the agent or the attorney in fact.
What kinds of powers of attorney are there?
So the simple power of attorney that's readily available to the public would be the statutory form power of attorney and for business matters. So that can deal with things like our bank accounts, our real estate, our tangible personal property, dealing with our public benefits, and all of the language is available in the statute, the California Probate Code, and it's available at a form, and it's pretty easy to either find on the internet or a self-help publisher, or if you happen to go to an estate planning attorney, many of them do use the simplified format.
And that, of course, lets somebody sign for me if I'm not able to really follow what's going on, or maybe I can't sign my name for whatever reason.
That's correct. And it can have very limited scope of powers, or it can be very broad. But you always want to name a person that you trust.
What is a durable power of attorney?
So the durable power just means that it works when we become incapacitated. We can have it spring into effect so that it doesn't work until you become incapacitated. And typically, you would have the requirement to be declared incapacitated by your physician. It can also be effective right away. So I happen to have a power of attorney that allows my husband to do things if I can't, if I'm not available, because I like to travel. And he can do things for me right now since I'm up here at the radio show, or if I become incapacitated. So it's durable, but it's also effective right now.
So something happens to one of us, and we need healthcare decisions made. What's the right form for that?
So the best format that I tell my clients to complete is a healthcare directive. In the state of California, a healthcare directive is available, and it used to be called a healthcare power of attorney, so those are kind of interchangeable terms. And again, the law is found in the California Probate Code. But the healthcare directive allows someone to make your medical decisions for you or your healthcare decisions for you if you're unable to communicate with your doctors. You can also have the form be effective right away so that someone can also communicate with your medical providers, even though you do have the ability to communicate with them as well.
And does this provide specifically what instructions you have, what decisions you want made on your behalf?
It can be very specific if you'd like it to be. Mine is very general. So a lot of people like to call this the pull the plug document. So if I'm facing end of life, I don't generally want overly heroic measures keeping me alive. And I want palliative care. I want to be comfortable if I'm in a terminal situation. So it generally has a general statement like that, but you can also have it be very detailed about how you feel about specific types of care. The other important thing is that if you follow a certain religious type of tenet, then you may also use a specified form, usually available from the religious practitioner at the religious office at your place of worship.
So you're not only telling somebody necessarily pull the plug or I want to be kept alive at all costs, but you could also give them specific instructions. I believe in surgery. I don't believe in the ventilator, whatever it may be.
I can also say that I want to stay at home for as long as possible instead of being placed in a nursing home, for instance, or that I want to have my primary physician and state their name. I can also be as detailed as no matter what, I still want to be able to play bridge with my friends on Thursdays. It can be very specific if that's what a person wants.
I want to live somewhere I could take my pets with me.
Yes, absolutely. And many facilities, if you have to be living outside of the home, do allow pets, or at least one pet, sometimes with weight or size limits and behavioral limits or conditions. I'm a pet person, too. My nickname's Kitty, and of course I love pets, so I would always want to have my pet with me.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco, where tonight we're talking Probate 101, planning for and managing smaller estates. Our title recognizes that my guest, Redwood City attorney Catherine Ray Wong, is a certified specialist who has authored and edited publications and taught other lawyers for many, many years. Well, maybe not that many years. I know you're not that old, but for quite some time. If you have questions for my guest and you're talking to an expert, you want to get some advice on what you can do with your estate, you've got the right person here. Give us a call. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free. We will pay. So not only are we providing you free advice, we're paying for your call. Call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic of estate planning, particularly as it relates to the small estate. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in the conversation. What does that mean to you? You didn't have to wait for us to get to the point of the subject you're interested in. You could jump right in. Call us, ask us your questions at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. We have a couple calls coming in. The last question I want to talk about in the planning stage, the last document we have, some people ask about a will or a trust, which one's advisable or how to know.
So one more comment I wanted to make about a will is we also have a form, a statutory form will in California, and it's very easy to find that form's easy to fill out. It is partly prepared and partly hand completed, and you can find that form at www.calbar.org, and they have a link to the PDF form. It does have to have the two witnesses. The other is a living trust, and the living trust is a contract that we do with ourselves.
Let me interrupt. Let me turn it over to Margaret. Margaret, you're on the air. Welcome. We seem to have lost Margaret. Who's queued up next? Linda?
Yes.
Welcome, Linda. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you. I have a sister who is having a cognitive impairment, and we are setting up a trust for her, and you were talking about durable power of attorney. I'm actually going to have, hire a professional fiduciary to perform that role, but right now I'm running into all sorts of problems not being able to get access to her information. And if I had durable power of attorney, I could. And I'm wondering if one can set it up where there are two agents and then at a later date I could bow out.
It is possible, but if your sister would be the one who has to set up the power of attorney, if I understand the situation correctly, does she have the capacity to do that?
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Because the other situation is that if she can't make her own legal decisions and empower someone by signing a power of attorney, which you can have co-agents named under the power of attorney and one can resign later to answer your question.
Okay.
But you may be faced with having to go to court to get the a conservatorship to be able to set up an estate plan for her through that process. But you can't do a power of attorney through a court conservatorship. But you can do a trust.
Yes, I mean, you can do a trust, and I think actually she does have capacity to sign the trust. So in that case, I could be a co-agent with another person and then resign, is what you're saying.
Yes, if you have a trust and you would be a trustee, or you would have your California licensed professional fiduciary as the trustee, and those are a very good resource for people in California.
Let me back up for just a moment and interrupt. Linda and Kitty, both of you used the word fiduciary. For those listeners that aren't familiar, can you describe that for us a bit, Kitty? What is a fiduciary?
So a fiduciary position is just anyone who's in charge of the business or financial affairs of another. And so we have duties to the person that we're handling the affairs for, to act honestly in their best interests. And that person is generally called a beneficiary. So your sister, Linda, would be the beneficiary of the trust that she sets up as long as she's alive. And the fiduciary, the private California licensed professional fiduciary, would be able to handle those affairs if she was named, he or she was named the trustee, and has to act in her best interests at all times, and honest and forthright, and do a good job.
Okay, thank you. Is there any conflict between having a durable power of attorney thing? Like, I mean, we could act separately or jointly, or does there have to be specific language about who would get to do what, or can we just act separately?
Well, the document that you will sign, that your sister would sign, empowering the co-agents, can actually state if they could act jointly or they can act separately. So those can, mm-hmm. those elections can be made and can be counseled by the attorney.
Linda was saying, could that document specify, I want this power to this person, but this one specifically to my sister, and differentiate roles for each?
It can be that specific, but generally people, if they want you to act separately, they have to act in the best interests of the beneficiary or the maker of the power of attorney or the trust. And then they just usually work as a team and delegate between each other. You handle this and I'll handle that. And everybody mm-hmm. reports back and says what's been done. So, but you can elect separately, or you can do separate powers of attorney, one for one agent and one for the other, and delineate who's going to handle what.
Oh, great. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Linda, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Let me turn it over to Mark. Mark, you're
good on
the
evening,
air.
And thank you for this service. First of all, I think it's more curiosity than anything, but you keep identifying this as a service for small estate planning. In California, with our inflated incomes being what they are, what would that number be? What's a ballpark figure that people are looking at that would be defined as small estate?
So when we're talking an estate, when somebody dies, in California we call small estates the value of altogether $150,000 or less. And there are different mechanisms that you can put in place to be able to manage those assets and pass them out to the beneficiaries. So in California we call it $150,000 or less.
Oh, brilliant. Well, okay, thank you for that, which then leads to my second question. I know these numbers have changed, or at least there are attempts to change them, but at this point, what is the limit that can be inherited, which is not subject to federal, at least, income tax?
So federal estate tax is what I think you mean.
Yes.
And the federal estate tax, currently, the exemption or exclusion amount, we say, is $11,400,000 for the year of 2019, so it's a lot. But it is scheduled to go away. But in the meantime, it will be indexed for inflation. We find out the increase in the amounts usually goes up a couple of $100,000, and we find out what that amount will be for 2020, somewhere in around usually the early December.
Oh, quite a distance between $150,000 and $11 million.
Yeah, well, there are different purposes. In California, we don't have inheritance or estate tax. So, but you're referring to the federal taxation
Correct.
Authorities. So in our world of estate planning, it involves a lot of tax. We talk about property tax. We talk about income tax. We talk mm-hmm. about estate tax. But the estate tax for now the exemption is quite large.
Right. And one final question. I appreciate all your patient answers. Am I incorrect in what I assumed was the case, that the proceeds of a life insurance policy are, in fact, no matter what level, are not taxable, or are they also subject to that inheritance tax?
So that's a pretty loaded question. Agents who sell the insurance like to say it's not taxable, but having a tax degree, my mind goes through all this minutia, and it is included in the estate for estate tax. tax purposes mm-hmm. if the person who's insured owned and controlled the policy. So that means they had the power to change the beneficiary. Oh. Sometimes we have other people own life insurance on our life. If we don't own it and control it, it will not be subject to estate tax. Insurance, life insurance, when it's payable to a beneficiary, is generally not income to the beneficiary, other than a very small amount of interest payable by the insurance company from the date of death, when the policy becomes payable, to the day they cut the check. They also throw some interest on there. So that small amount of interest is income taxable, but not the insurance itself.
All right. I appreciate the thoroughness of your answers, and I appreciate your generosity in providing all of this information for the listeners.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining us, Mark. Let me turn it to Nancy. Nancy, you're on Your Legal Rights. Nancy, if you're not there, is Eve still with us?
Hi, yes, I am. I have a question about power of attorney. I have power of attorney for my sister, and I'm wondering if I'm responsible for her debts.
Not personally. You are responsible for paying her bills, if that's part of the power of attorney.
It is.
Only to the extent of her assets.
Well, you mean...
So you don't... You're not personally responsible for her debts.
I know, but we have a joint checking account, and I can sign the checks, so I sign the checks, but she has some debts that are just bills from loans, but they're not a lot. They're like student loans, and one of them is something else. I'm not really sure, but not for a lot of money, like not over $10,000, but so... Even if I have a joint checking account with her, would I be responsible?
So if she has asked you to pay her bills with that power of attorney and that's what you're doing, if you're supposed to be dealing with her creditors, then you should, as the agent under her power of attorney, if it says that's part of what your duties are, mm-hmm. then you should be dealing with those issues as well.
Okay. So that means I should probably... I am dealing with them, but I'm slow... Okay, I guess I'll...
We'll just contact them and negotiate them and tell them the situation.
I have done that with a few people. One of them is kind of thorny. Okay, I'll keep on working at it. Thank you very much.
Best of luck to you.
And thank you for joining us. Joshua, you're on the air. Joshua, are you with us? Joshua.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I just had a quick question about alternatives that they could do with your remains. Is it only cremation or like a funeral burying you could do?
As opposed to what were you thinking of?
Well, I wanted to do like a purely organic buried in the dirt, maybe underneath a plant.
There are some available, you know, e-friendly ways to dispose of remains. It just has to be properly done under the law. The morticians who run the funeral homes, they're really good at helping people understand what the different options are available. If you are going to be placed on private land, however, you have to have the permission of the landowner.
Okay, thank you. And obviously you'd need the public permission for public land?
Yeah, you just... That would take special requirements to be met, yes.
All right, thank you very much.
Joshua, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. You know, Joshua brought up one other point. What about embalming? Is that optional?
Embalming, I do believe, is optional. The morticians are the real experts in that area.
Okay, we have a caller that chooses to remain anonymous. We're happy to have you. Welcome, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
I didn't get answered. Am I on the air? It's a very quick, simple question.
You're on the air with us. Welcome.
Okay. Yes. Is there any, to, for the two witnesses, is it okay, can then be relatives, any restriction on who is the witness if you do get that two people witnessing your will?
They need to be over the age of 18, so they have to be adults, and they should not be named in the will at all.
Oh, that's very important. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining us, and we have a couple moments left before we break. Let me turn it to Aaron. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, guys. Wondering about an old case. Are you able to discuss an old probate case that I found about my landlord?
Sure. You're. It sounds like you might have your radio on. We're getting a bit of feedback. Can you perhaps turn that down?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm a veteran. I was in veteran housing. She owns the property. I had to move. I finally learned I could do some research through some websites. I found she was removed as conservator. Norman Jensen, she overspent, I guess, to the detriment of his estate. She was a conservator and conservatee. And then she destroyed documents to have a... She tried to remove... California Berkeley and the Symphony of San Francisco Symphony and also Shriners Hospital is beneficiaries of the estate. So she had a lot of crazy stuff. Her name's Marky Lynn Quayle.
Okay, let me interrupt you for just a moment. For your own protection, to a certain extent to ours as well, it's okay to talk about an old estate. It's okay to talk about real cases. Don't start talking about specific people, specific names, things like that. That doesn't allow us to comment.
All right. Well,
so why don't you go ahead and ask your question? I don't mean to cut you off, but we're running.
If I'm finding this stuff out about my old landlord, Marky, is this something that, you know, can be used in civil court, these old probate court cases? Showing her, you know, how she used to, what she's been involved in.
Well, it depends on the party who's being adversely affected. So, if somebody's being cut out of a will, they may be able to use information, if it adversely affects them.
Yeah, I mean, I just found these online, and it's very much troublesome. I mean, I've had other people look at it, and this probate stuff goes down and what she did in someone else's will, and the court decided against her. But regardless, I'm just learning about it, and thank you very much.
Were you a party to it, or were you involved?
No, I just ended up being a tenant in one of her properties, and I had to move. And the state of California is investigating her now, and now I'm pulling up evidence of like 20 lawsuits she's been involved in. She has a long history, state California.
Well, what I can tell you is that if anyone contacts you during an investigation of these type of issues, just be open with them and honest.
But don't embellish and don't take it too far. Oftentimes, you don't want to get involved in the fray. Part of the preservation is not to be the one that people are pointing a finger at the end. Even if you've done nothing wrong, you don't want to be in a spot where you've got to explain yourself. So, for what it's worth.
No, I get it. I don't want either. I'm just learning about this, and I heard your radio station, and I'm a little disturbed. But, you know, again, I'm educating myself. And these probate cases are public records, so I guess I'm asking about how this usually goes down. You know, the judge said she spent this guy. This guy had dementia. She spent his estate to the detriment and was removed as conservator. The record.
I get it. We're running low. We're running at the end of the half hour, so I've got to cut you off. And I'm sorry to do that.
But, and I just want to make one comment as to Aaron's call. You know, people think that estate planning and estate administration is boring, and oftentimes it has so much of an interesting element in the story of all of our individual lives.
You know, as lawyers, If only we could tell them, we would have the best war stories in town. I'm Jeff Hayden, and you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. Tonight, we take up Probate 101, Planning for and Managing Smaller Estates. With me is Redwood City Attorney Catherine Ray Wong, a certified specialist who has authorized and edited publications and taught other lawyers in this area. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as you've heard, you're not limited to the exact point we may be talking about. Anything on the subject, you're welcome to call and talk to our expert toll-free at 866-798-8255. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And of course, you can call us if your question is regarding estate planning, particularly as the small estate, at 866-798-8255. We've talked about wills and statutory form wills and powers of attorney and healthcare directives. And let's talk a little bit about trusts.
So, Jeff, a living trust is basically a contract that we do with ourself while we're alive, and that's why we call it a living trust. And the benefits of it, it could avoid probate. It could avoid a conservatorship process if we become incapacitated by naming, as one of our callers mentioned, that she's a successor trustee. And so somebody can handle our affairs pursuant to the trust document if we're unable to handle things ourselves. It's generally private. There's no public list of the assets or the beneficiaries or the goings-on of the trust. Again, I always mention to people, you really have to have someone that you trust. And the California Licensed Professional Fiduciaries are a great resource for clients here in the state of California, as well as a bank or a trust company that has a trust department as well.
Are they usually bonded as well?
They're usually bondable. They don't always necessarily have to post a bond, especially if they're handling the affairs of the trust outside of a court situation. But they're licensed and regulated by the state of California for the California Licensed Professional Fiduciary. And then, of course, the banks or trust companies are in control of very large sums of assets for various amounts of people that are their customers. So they're a deep pocket, as we like to say in the law. And so they have every interest in doing their job correctly. And many of them do a spectacular job for clients. When we're dealing with estate tax planning, oftentimes, particularly for married couples or domestic partners, we do planning that is customized to that couple or single people. We do trusts for them as well. We can do special needs planning for maybe a member of our family who may have certain disabilities or differing abilities, and their money needs to be protected so that their public benefits are not disturbed. We can have continuing trusts or spendthrift trusts for people who really are not good with money, or if we have perhaps addiction issues or just people who are just not good at handling things. Minor children. So if we have children under the age of 18, there can be continuing trusts. And if it's a reasonably good size amount of wealth, it can the trust can continue for a very long time. And then we can also plan for our pets quite specially in a trust as well.
We've heard talk, I think it was Linda who first mentioned it, and we've talked since about a fiduciary. How does one go about finding a good fiduciary? If a close relative or someone you really trust is not available or trustworthy to manage the financial affairs, or someone is incapacitated, how do we go about finding a good fiduciary?
So most estate planning attorneys have a good resource of knowing who are the private professional fiduciaries that work in their community that they respect and have had the opportunity to observe their work. There is a California association, the Professional Fiduciary Association of California. We call it the PFAC group. They have a website and they can be looked up, and then they have their professional fiduciaries who are all licensed and listed by county in the state of California.
Now, we've talked about trusts, we've talked about wills, we've talked about healthcare directives, we've talked about powers of attorney. The last document, perhaps, to talk about a way to leave real property to a beneficiary. Do you have a recommendation there?
So a few years ago, our California legislature decided to try an experimental revocable transfer on death deed. And it's a rather simple way to leave real estate to a beneficiary. It was effective January 1, 2016. It's scheduled to expire January 1, 2021, unless it happens to be extended by the legislature. The law does say that how to fill out the form and to record it with the county, and then it can be revoked at any time by the person who owns the property and has put the registration of beneficiaries on who inherits it when they die.
So suppose I execute one of those and leave the property to, say, my cat. Okay, well, I'll make it somebody living in a person, but
you can make it me.
And suppose I did, and the law sunsets at the end of, what, 2021 or whatever it may be, is the deed still good, even though the law's changed?
Yes. If you executed the deed within the effective time period of the law and you recorded it properly with the county recorder's office, it will be effective and follow through with your wishes.
And at my age and with a 19-year-old cat, all things considered, I probably wouldn't leave the property to him. I would otherwise have to start over again with my estate planning, but
yes, your estate planning attorney would be able to guide you in a better organized fashion for your cat.
And I think I know one. I'm Jeff Hayden, and you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. Tonight, we take up Probate 101, Planning for and Managing Smaller Estates. My guest tonight is Catherine Ray Wong of Redwood City, from the Redwood City firm of Aaron, Reichert, Karpel, and Riffle. Remember, we're giving a quiz just before the hour's over. Aaron, Reichert, Karpel, and Riffle in Redwood City. Catherine is a certified specialist in estate planning, probate, and trust law from the Board of Legal Specialization, California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. She also has her LLM in taxation, that's a Master's of Law in Taxation, and is a member of the Estate Planning, Probate, and Trust Law section of the California Lawyers Association. If you have questions for my guest, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Shirley, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, I want to ask you a question about probate, but I need to tell you that when I tried the toll-free number, it said it was not in service. So I'm calling from out of San Francisco to the 415 number. My question is, I understand that you don't have to go through probate unless you have an estate of over $100,000. Is that true?
It's now $150,000 is the threshold now that changed a few years back. And it also depends if there's real estate. You do still have to have a simplified type of a court order, but it's not a full-blown probate.
No, I don't have any real estate. This is just cash kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And we're also going to talk in a few minutes about other ways to transfer ownership to things in case you want to name a beneficiary on an account at a financial institution such as a bank or an investment firm. So there are other ways to do that without having to deal with this, what we call the small estate affidavit, the $150,000 or less.
Okay, so I have done a payment on death arrangement with most of my investments.
Yeah, POD. That's excellent, Shirley.
And so then you do not, that does not count as a part of your estate then to be necessarily be probated.
That's right.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Shirley, thank you for joining us. Let me turn it over to Warren. Warren, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Oh, hey. Yeah, I have a question. Yeah, I have 403Bs and life insurance, and my job has death benefit. I mean, I've just named beneficiaries for that. And I don't know if that's better than filling out the will.
No, Warren, you get an A for that. So you should have a will also. But that was good. Another thing we're going to talk about is properly completed beneficiary designation forms on what we call our contract relationships. So just like our life insurance, we name a beneficiary on the 403B, 401K, 457. Those are actually Internal Revenue Code sections that those accounts are established under and operating under. But those types of retirement accounts, you just have a properly completed beneficiary form on file with the administrator or the holder of the account. And then I suggest not only having a primary beneficiary, but also have a contingent or a secondary beneficiary in case something happens to the first person you've named.
And if I believe if that person passes, I mean, if we go together, then their children would get it?
It depends on what the form says. So if the form says to their issue by right of representation or per stirpes, those are both interchangeable terms, and it means it would go to their lineal descendants. You're correct.
Okay.
But you have to check the form.
Is, I mean, living in the Bay Area, the house is like tripled, so it's probably like $700,000 now.
Yes.
If I don't have a will, does it go? It's my understanding it would go to my mother is still alive. Would it go to her or?
If you have no children and no spouse, it would go to your parent or parents who are surviving. Okay. Yes.
But then she would still have to go through probate.
That's correct. And it's not a terrible process. It's just a little bit long, drawn out, and expensive, but it's quite straightforward.
Okay. And the legislation you just mentioned, the law form, does that...
For the revocable transfer on death deed.
Right.
And you can Google that online and find out some good information. Just put in California revocable transfer on death deed, and there are some very good instructions about it.
Okay. Would that still go through probate? Or would
no, it does not go through probate.
Oh, okay. So
but you have to record it.
Answer.
Yeah, but you have to record it while you're alive.
Right. No, I'm still alive.
Okay. Yes, you are.
Yeah, I know. Thank God. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Thank you, Warren. Thank you for joining us. And let me turn it to Rod. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you. I have some property in Wisconsin. My partner has property here in California. So the transfer on death seems ideal for California. Do other states have this, in particular Wisconsin?
It's my understanding that some other states do, and that's kind of where California was a little later getting on board with this type of law. But since I don't have a license to practice in Wisconsin, I'm sorry, I can't advise you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Rod, thank you for joining us. And it seems that we have gone through a pretty good chunk of the hour talking about planning. And before I shift gears into administration, is there anything else that you thought we should talk about estate planning for the small estate?
I think other than what Warren brought up, having properly completed beneficiary designation forms on file for our contractual relationships is always very important and oftentimes what people don't realize. And another caller had mentioned that she had put POD, I think that was Shirley, and with the pay on death accounts, such as Shirley had done, you can do those at your financial institution as well. We call those Totten trusts. They're actually a type of living trust where you've named a beneficiary on an account, and the beneficiary can't access that account unless there's something left over and you're dead. And so they provide a copy of their identification and a certified copy of your death certificate, and then they get to collect the account. But when we're dealing with estate administration, we are always looking at how do we transfer ownership, just as we were talking about the pay on death or the beneficiary designation form on the retirement account.
Before we jump to estate administration, let me really quickly circle back, because we're running low on time and it may be your last chance to call in. For those who have questions, we're talking about Probate 101, planning for and managing smaller estates. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number here in the studio is 415- 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, most people, it seems to be working. I noticed that Shirley had a problem calling in. But try us toll-free, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as you've heard from other callers, and as is always the case here, you don't need to jump right where we are in the conversation. Call us with your questions, anything in the subject matter. Will, welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're on the air.
Thank you. This is an odd question, but I think she can answer it for me. I have made out my will, and I have everything set, except in the Jewish religion, you're not allowed to give any part of your body for research or anything. You're supposed to die with everything intact, except for your blood, okay? So I designated that I wish my blood to be removed and used for research. Could you tell me how, since burial is usually done within like 24, 36 hours, it's in my will, that I can be certain that that is going to be done?
Well, unfortunately, when we pass away, we have to die under certain circumstances to be able to be donors of, you know, any part of our body. And so it may or may not be possible from a medical standpoint. They may or may not want what we want to leave. But if we can, you should, you know, one of the things you can do is speak with your physician the next time you, you know, go to see them and talk to them a little bit about this arrangement that you would like. And then with respect to your healthcare directive, make sure that you attach specific instructions and tell your agent that you've named that this is a specific desire that you wish to do, if at all possible.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us, and let me turn it to Alejandro. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having this on air. Quick question. My husband and I did our trust about maybe a couple of years ago, but we haven't really had a chance or sit down to fund it. So I don't know if that would matter. Like, let's say if something happened to one of us, if it's not funded, it's like, what's the, I guess, consequence?
So probably the worst consequence is not even mentioning on an attached schedule to the trust that that you intended the asset to be subject to the trust. And it could potentially, depending what county you're in, trigger a probate. And so your will should say that the assets will get put into the trust. So ultimately, what we call a pour-over will is executed with a living trust, and it will direct it over there, but hopefully it doesn't have to go to probate. So what I tell my clients to do, and I think the law is pretty clear in California, is every year, just like I do, I sit down and I do a revised schedule of assets to my trust. And I write down, you know, my husband and I, we only have joint assets, so we sit down and we write down all our joint assets that are not our retirement things that have beneficiaries on them. So we have our home and, you know, maybe a bank account, and we've got our cat and our dog, and he's got his windsurf equipment because he's a big windsurfer. And so we want to make sure that those are subject to our trust. So then we sign and date the revised schedule, and we tuck it in the same envelope as the original trust. We don't unbind the original trust. We just tuck that revised schedule in there. And we do that every year to make sure that we've got at least, we'll get around to funding it sometime. But if we don't, then if you die, then a quick court order can be obtained based on what we call a Hegstead petition. And the court can order those assets be put into the trust if there's a death.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights, where we will turn it over to Marilyn.
Hi. You said it was okay if it wasn't exactly on the subject, but I did hear you mention fiduciary, and that's what my question is on. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Well, both my parents died, and my sister was the executor of the trust. Is that correct? I think she was also the executor of the will. I don't know if I'm using the right word, but anyway, so my dad didn't keep good records of cost basis, but he kept notes, and so she's very tidy. So after she took care of, this was just recently, she tidied up, and so she she threw away the notes on the cost basis, having sent me a letter to what she thought I needed to know. But she didn't send it in any special way, and I don't get all my mail, and so I never received it. So did she, can't think of what the word is, but did she not do her fiduciary duty by me?
Well, one of the things you might want to ask her is if she has an appraisal for the asset, you know, the specific, like how much each share was valued at your dad's date of death, because usually we don't use cost basis any longer when somebody dies. We measure things at fair market value as of date of death.
Oh, I don't mean that. I know that. This is, these are things that, that he gave to us before he died.
Oh, valuation for gifts. Okay. Well, it just all depends on what the particular asset was. Is there a way that you can open communication and ask her to resend you the information?
He threw it all away.
She threw it all away. I'm sorry that I missed that statement.
I'm thinking she didn't. She was derelict in her fiduciary duty to me by doing that.
Well, one of the things that you can do yourself is if you can go back in time and figure out when your dad gave you the asset and figure out what the fair market value was when he gave it to you.
Okay.
And then you would at least know what the value of it was. But if you're dealing with cost basis like a stock, you would need to know what your dad paid for it, and that is difficult. So you might want to talk to your accountant to see if they can help you figure out a way to go back in time and figure it out.
But is she somehow responsible for not saving that for me?
If it was for gifts during lifetime, your dad actually should have told you what his cost basis was when he gave it to you.
Okay, so she had no responsibility on saving that for me.
I can't really say that she didn't have the responsibility, but I think you're kind of at where you're at, and if she can't get the information for you, you have to try to get it yourself, and I would suggest talking to your accountant to see whether or not they'd have any insight on how you can do that.
Okay, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
So I was going to turn it over at this point to estate administration. We have but a few minutes left. But what are some quick ways to transfer ownership?
So a couple of common things that we also have are jointly held assets. And we have joint tenancy with right of survivorship in the state of California. And basically, you can put any asset in joint tenancy with right of survivorship. And when one of the owners dies, it does exactly like it sounds. The survivor or survivors on the title take the dead person's share. There is a process that you have to usually provide a copy of the death certificate, sometimes some type of notarized affidavit. But that's an easy way to transfer ownership when we die. And then a couple of other things. If you have community property that's owned with spouses, we also have community property with right of survivorship in the state of California. And that works very similarly to joint tenancy, but it's for spouses and also still for domestic partners, which we still have in the state of California as well. And that is also a very easy way to transfer title, just by producing a copy of the death certificate and perhaps an affidavit.
And one thing I understand is a lot of times when you're dealing with the community property as opposed to joint tenancy, there's major tax benefits, are there not?
In the state, we're one of 14 community property states in the nation, and community property, as far as the Internal Revenue Code, our federal tax law, as well as California tax law, community property, both halves of the community receive a new basis at death. Oftentimes, the basis goes up. We like to say it gets stepped up at the date of death of one spouse. It's not always the case. Sometimes we bought things high, and it actually goes down at the date of death value. But fair market value as of the date of death for both halves of the community establishes the new income tax basis moving forward when we lose one spouse.
So if I could translate that really quickly, if something happens to me and if I go to sell my house, my taxes, my capital gain is based on what I paid for it. But if I own it in community property and something happens to me, it gets treated by my surviving spouse at the value of that day for all purposes of capital gains.
That's correct.
Last thing you were going to talk about was another means,
So another way of jointly holding title is tenants in common. And a lot of people don't quite realize when they have tenants in common what it actually means. So tenants in common is a way to own assets, typically stock or investment accounts or real property, so real estate in the state of California. And tenants in common, that person's share is subject to their will. It doesn't automatically go to the survivor on title. So be aware of how you hold title to assets and make sure you understand the legal consequences.
With that, we're essentially out of time. I'd like to give you a minute and a half, if there's any closing comments you have, anything you want to say to sum up.
Well, I think that when we're dealing with the smaller estates, and as I said, usually we're taking a look at a threshold of $150,000 or less, we can collect that by a notarized affidavit signed by the person or persons who are inheriting it. But also to remember that we take those assets subject to the creditor claims of the person who died. So we will have to pay off their bills. And it was not in joint tenancy. It wasn't community property with the spouse or the domestic partner. It wasn't a contract with a properly completed beneficiary designation form like our retirement accounts or our IRAs, and it wasn't in a living trust. So that's kind of the small estate affidavit. We also have streamlined court procedures for lower value real estate, which is kind of hard to find around here, but still out in the desert, there's some postage stamp lot somewhere that's worth less than $150,000, and there's even a smaller simplified procedure for $50,000 or less.
And with that, I would like to thank you, Catherine Ray Wong. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been Probate 101, Planning for and Managing Smaller Estates. My guest tonight has been Catherine Ray Wong from the Redwood City firm of Aaron, Reichert, Carpel, and Riffle, a certified specialist in estate planning, probate, and tax law. And with that, Catherine, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
And at the controls, Joanne Marr. And most of all, thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back next week with more of Your Legal Rights. And have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.